Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
All right, we got to dive in and do some All-22 on the Bills thumping of the Vikings last Sunday. And Nate, there's a lot to like on film there.
Yeah, I mean, both offensively and then especially defensively, they just looked like a completely different team the last six quarters of football they've played compared to the first six quarters of football they played this year. And now the big question for me now is, can they continue this the play that they've had for the last six quarters?
Yeah, I saw some stats today. ESPN's Mike Rodak, the Bills beat reporter for them, tweeted out the Bills pretty much rank in the top of the NFL in pretty much any defensive metric for the last six quarters. They're first in yards per play given up on defense by far, and pretty much all the other measures as well. But I think the answer probably lies somewhere in the middle. They're nowhere near as bad as they were the first six quarters. And I don't think they're as great as they have been the last six. I mean, I don't think they're the best defense in the NFL. I think we'll see them come back to earth a little bit, especially against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers offense. But I think as long as they can continue to play decently well, they're going to give the team a chance to win.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And that was basically the formula that they used last year to win football games. The defense had to play pretty well, and the offense had to do just enough, and that's where they won games. And I think the defense is going to I don't think there's going to be a point where they look as bad as they did the first six quarters. I don't think, though, that this week I think it'll be tough for them to do enough to beat the Packers. But I do want to talk, I'm very excited to talk about the what the Bills did differently against the Vikings than they did against the Chargers and the Ravens that allowed them to win this football game.
Yeah, the first thing I noticed is they used a lot of blitz packages. There we go. Got it right on the third try there. That was something that surprised me a bit. They did generate a lot of pressure from blitzes, which is a bit different from what they did the first 2 weeks where they rushed for and got shredded in zone coverage.
Yeah, and one of the things they did is they still rushed for a lot of the time. They would just rush different four players all the time. Like there were plays where they would have Jerry Hughes drop back into coverage or Trent Murphy drop back into coverage, or sometimes both of them, and then rush linebackers and things like that. And that was the kind of things they did that really kept the Vikings offense off balance.
Yeah, it's always good to mix up those the defensive packages there, especially when you're playing zone coverage. And I think that's what McDermott excels in as a defense. Leslie Frazier did call the plays in that game, but it was interesting to see them mix up how they were bringing pressure, whether it be through blitzes or whether they're dropping defensive ends into coverage. Trent Murphy actually had a pass breakup. That was something that surprised me in the All-22. And it was just refreshing to see the defense played with a lot of energy too. You could tell, you know, mixing up those packages, it's probably a combination of that and the team playing well. They just looked like they were playing a lot faster.
Yeah, and one thing I really liked that the defense did against Kirk Cousins is they basically didn't defend the far side of the field ever. They defended the middle of the field, defended the near side, and basically gave up the far side, especially the short pass of the far side of the field, and just said, okay, is Kirk Cousins going to throw all the way across the field to gain 3 yards? Probably not. So they just ignored that part of the field, and they did a really good job taking away pretty much every other option that Kirk Cousins had most of the time. And they did that with really good pass coverage and also sending five-man pressures all game long.
Yeah, and I thought Ryan Lewis played really well for the Bills' second cornerback in his first NFL start. He looked pretty good out there. He looked competent, and that's encouraging. I mean, I don't think he's going to be the starter this week with Philip Gaines back and Taron Johnson playing the nickel spot, but it's good to know that there looks like there's some capable depth there on the Bills roster.
Yeah, the pickups from the Patriots, it's the opposite of what has been the past three, four, five seasons. The two pickups from the Patriots the Bills made have both looked pretty good so far this year. The punter, Corey Bohorquez, and then Ryan Lewis, both looking pretty good. And the guys the Patriots have taken from the Bills, I mean, Gillis doesn't play for them anymore. Hogan has looked lost. So I'd say that this is the first time in a while the Bills have gotten the better end of that stick.
Yeah, it's nice to see that as a change for once. Nate, what was something that kind of caught your eye in the film that wasn't obvious, you know, watching the broadcast live?
The biggest thing that was obvious to me is the Bills fully committed to stopping the run in this game. And they called a ton of run blitzes, especially the first two drives against the Vikings. And they didn't let the Vikings run the ball. I mean, the Vikings ran the ball six times. And yes, a lot of that was because they got down so early. But they didn't, when they tried to run the ball the beginning of the game, there was nothing for the running backs to do. And I think if they continue with these run blitzes and forcing quarterbacks to throw, they love their secondary. They love their pass defense. And if they can prevent teams from just running the ball all over them and force them to throw the ball, that's the situation I think that Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott want to be in more often than not.
Yeah, my first thing, I tend to watch the offensive line a lot, especially with the end zone view of the All-22. John Miller has been so good the last two games. You know, he was a big concern after that first game against the Ravens, but he has been lights out, winning almost every single one-on-one matchup, whether it be in run blocking or pass blocking. He had a tremendous game against the Vikings. And I don't know if this always happens or if I just picked it up this week in the All-22. It looked like Miller was kind of quarterbacking at least the right side of the offensive line with Russell Bodine. It looked like he was kind of tapping Bodine before the snap, going over, you know, making sure Bodine was picking up his assignment. Usually it's the other way around with the center being the quarterback of the offensive line. They certainly miss Eric Wood there. But he seems to be, you know, kind of a leadership presence as well as playing extremely well.
Yeah, and that's something John Miller is. I thought John Miller just had a really poor year last year because of the scheme. And I'm very glad to see that he has come back and started off this season at least looking really, really good. So one thing, though, that I will say about the tapping, so that has nothing to do with coordinating the lines. That is because of the crowd noise. The right guard, so John Miller is turning his head to look at Josh Allen, and then he taps the center when Josh Allen wants the ball snapped.
Oh, okay.
So they do that because Josh Allen cannot hear, especially when they're in shotgun, because the center certainly cannot hear Josh Allen in the stadium like that. So that's what that is. If you watch, you see it a lot in really loud stadiums. Pretty much anyone that plays in Minnesota, anyone that plays in Seattle, Kansas City, their offensive lines have to do that.
Yeah, that's something I guess I never picked up on with that being a snap count. I feel kind of dumb now. But regardless, John Miller has played really well. I thought Russell Bodine was okay. They didn't ask him to win a lot of one-on-one matchups. It was a lot of, you know, helping Dukas or Miller. Mostly Dukas, it looked like, in pass protection. But I thought Bodine was okay. It's definitely been an upgrade from what Ryan Groy is giving them. Ryan Groy lost out there the first two games. And it was nice to see some competence from that center position because it's so important.
Yeah, and I've been pleasantly surprised with the Bills' offensive line through three games, honestly. After the preseason, when I was very worried that basically they were just going to get the quarterback killed all season long, it hasn't really happened. And even Sean McDermott had said some of the sacks they gave up in the first 2 weeks were not the quarterback's fault. It was – or not the offensive line's fault. They were the fault of Josh Allen a couple times, especially in week two. And the offensive line has pleasantly surprised me this season.
Yeah. Deion Dawkins has been pretty good at left tackle. He hasn't been their best offensive lineman, I wouldn't say. I would say it's probably a tie between the two guards, John Miller and Vlad Dukas, probably two positions that we were really hesitant about going into the season. Dukas got beat once for a sack this week. That was his fault, I think. The rest looked like they were on Allen for holding the ball to me. Jordan Mills has quietly played, you know, at least average to above average at right tackle as well. So they're definitely giving you much more than you thought they would after that just horrid performance against Cincinnati in week three of the preseason.
Yeah, and that's something that, especially against a defense like the Vikings, a vaunted defense even though they had some players out for injuries, to play the way they did against a team like that gives me some hope that as the season progresses and the Bills face some other tough defenses, that they can provide the protection that Josh Allen needs.
Yeah, the Minnesota Vikings should be one of the tougher defenses they face all year. And I was encouraged to see Josh Allen go at Xavier Rhodes, too. He wasn't afraid to throw the ball over there. And I think that's good for the Bills' offense because they don't have a receiver that can, you know, just have the ball force-fed to him. So it was good to see him be aggressive and go at one of the league's top corners and not make any horrible mistakes.
Yeah, and I think what the Bills did on offense against the Vikings is kind of how Dable is going to play the rest of the season. Because of the lack of weapons on offense outside of LeSean McCoy, you kind of have to use Josh Allen like a Cam Newton type, where I think his typical game this year is going to be like 17 of 24, something like that, for 200 yards, and he's going to get like 10 carries for 30, 40 yards and a touchdown running the ball. I think they're going to use him a lot as like their goal line back, and instead of handing the ball to a running back, just let Josh Allen pound it in there, especially seeing how good he was at his feet against the Vikings.
Yeah, it was great to see them actually use quarterback sneaks. That's something we haven't seen in Buffalo in a really long time, at least in my memory as a 25-year-old Bills fan. But it's something that you watch Tom Brady do all these years, and you're like, how can someone that unathletic make it look that easy? And finally, the Bills have a guy that can just simply get you a yard when you need it.
Yeah, quarterback sneaks are not as easy as a lot of fans think, and that's why there are a lot of teams that do not do them very often, because their quarterbacks are just not very good at it. And Josh Allen, the touchdown, the Josh Allen second rushing touchdown, where he took that ball and just put it right over the top, that's a really good play. And there are not very many quarterbacks in this league that can do something like that.
Yeah, I thought there was a lot to like from Josh Allen this week. He went through his progressions well. He didn't really make any terrible passes that I recall off the top of my head. My one complaint with him is he holds the ball for too long sometimes, waiting for something to happen. And by that time, the pocket's kind of closed in on him, and then he starts running nowhere. And that's when he gets sacked, and it's not the offensive line's fault. So he needs to learn when, you know, to get outside the pocket, not to scramble, but keep his eyes downfield, or to just throw the ball away. It's okay to throw the ball away. You know, I don't know if it's because he's worried about that completion percentage or if he just wants something to happen, but sometimes you just have to eat a play and not take the sack. He fumbled 3 times in that game, and that's something that kind of got washed away because they blew out the Vikings. And it could have been a different story if the Bills didn't recover all 3 of those fumbles.
Yeah, so I guess there's three things to respond to here. So the first one, the fumbles, that will be a problem. He really only fumbled twice, though, because the one of them wasn't actually a fumble. The referees messed that up pretty badly. The one where they were trying to run that little mini shovel pass off the snap where he kind of caught it and dropped it, that really should have been a pass. But the other two, yes, he cannot fumble the ball. I think against the Vikings, he made decisions significantly quicker than he did against the Chargers, for the most part. But I do see where the biggest thing for him is to get the ball out of his hands faster. And I think Brian Daboll helped him out with that a lot by giving him some pretty easy reads, especially pre-snap reads against the Vikings. Like a lot of the RPOs that the Bills ran were pre-snap decided, where he didn't have to really think about it after the ball was snapped. He just looked at how the defense was aligned, and based on how they were aligned, he was running this play and throwing to this guy or doing this, handing the ball off to this guy. He kind of had a lot of his decisions made for him, and that makes it easy on a rookie quarterback like that.
Yeah, Nate, that's something you pick up definitely better than I do, is those pre-snap looks, and that's something that Josh Allen is much better at than probably most Bills quarterbacks of the last 25 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, like, even the first play of the game, that little quick screen to Ray Ray, that was an RPO that Allen was basically reading how many defenders, the Vikings defenders, were in the box, and he counted more than he wanted to see, so he threw the ball. And a similar thing on the touchdown pass, the fake screen where they threw that post route, that wheel and is a very similar thing. The motion, Josh Allen saw that the Vikings went to cover three. They do this thing where they point in the air when they're going to cover three, and he saw that they went to cover three, knew what he was going to have available because of that, and really sold the screen and had a wide open Jason Kroon for a touchdown. And if Dable can keep designing those kinds of plays for him week in and week out, that will make him look way better because his life will be so much easier, and he won't have to think as much about what he's doing with the ball after the snap.
Yeah, that's really good analysis, Nate. And I think that's something that Allen's going to excel at is reading the defense. I know Dable makes it easier for him now, but he just looks confident under center. He seems to know what he wants to do with the ball before he does it. And another thing I noticed is those little shoulder hitches he makes, not quite a full pump fake, and the way he maneuvers or manipulates defenders with his eyes is really good for a young quarterback. And I think that's another sign that he could be something special. I mean, we don't know. It's been 2 games. But I really like when you see a rookie quarterback able to do those things.
Yeah, I mean, on that touchdown pass to Kroon, he does 2 things that most rookies probably wouldn't be able to do. The first one is he sold the screen hard. And then after he sold the screen, he looked left, just a quick glance left, and got the safety to freeze. And that left Kroon completely wide open. And he, because of the defense he saw, he knew what he was doing the entire time. But he still was able to sell it really, really well. And that's the kind of thing you like to see.
All right, Nate, so we spent a lot of time on the offensive line and Josh Allen and just the defense generally here. So after reviewing the All-22, who's kind of your player of the game? It can be obvious or something that kind of went a little bit unnoticed.
So my player of the game is Jerry Hughes. Jerry Hughes was absolutely unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. If he plays like that every week, he'll be an All-Pro this year. Like that is how good he was against the Vikings. Riley Reiff had no chance the entire game. And it's not often you see a defensive end have that kind of impact rushing the passer and also drop back and make a couple plays in coverage. And so for that, my player of the game is Jerry Hughes.
Yeah, that was going to be my number one. So I'm going to go to a bit of kind of an unsung player of the game. For me, that's Lorenzo Alexander. I mean, they had him in there rushing as a defensive tackle, mostly in the second half, and he was just getting a ton of pressures, just bull rushing. Is like, I think it was like a 5-tech he was lining up, or just standing up as a defensive tackle. And he wreaked havoc along with Jerry Hughes on that Vikings offensive line. And that was awesome to see your strong side linebacker lining up as a defensive tackle and just bull rushing the crap out of the Vikings offensive line.
Yeah, and I think that's something that they're going to do with Lorenzo Alexander quite frequently this year because of how good he is at it, and he is a much better pass rusher interior-wise than pretty much any of the defensive tackles on the Bills roster outside of maybe Kyle Williams, and that makes him very valuable there in pass rushing situations.
Yeah, and I also thought Harrison Phillips played well when he was in there. He was able to kind of dominate some one-on-ones. He didn't really finish any plays, but he was there, able to get some pressure. And I think that helped the Bills, the other guys on the Bills defensive line, like Lorenzo Alexander and Jerry Hughes. One guy I want to see improve is Trent Murphy. He did have the big play where he had the forced fumble and the sack there. But he needs to develop some sort of inside move. I feel like he's constantly just trying to run around the right tackle, and he doesn't really have much else in his repertoire.
Yeah, he doesn't have a ton of really good moves. Like, Jerry Hughes can do a lot of things to get into the backfield. He didn't need to against the Vikings. He pretty much just sprinted around the outside of Riley Reiff the entire game. But he does have a lot of moves in his arsenal, much, much more than Trent Murphy does. But I think that because of Murphy's versatility to do things like rushing the passer and then also being able to drop back into coverage, that's I think the Bills value that more than him just being a pass rusher. But yes, I do agree that he could certainly expand on his pass rushing arsenal.
Yeah, and it also could be a byproduct of rust. I mean, the guy hasn't played in a year, basically missed a lot of training camp in the preseason with that groin injury. and then the reoccurring groin injury. So maybe we'll see him get it going a little bit more as the season goes along. So before we wrap up our All-22 section of this pod, Nate, is there anything that jumped out on the tape to you about the Vikings in particular?
The biggest thing that jumped out to me was Kirk Cousins' inability to throw the ball to his open receivers on Sunday. I mean, you watch some of this tape and you see the end zone views, and Cousins has so many times he does have guys that are open and he just misses them. Like, Stephon Diggs made Tre'Davious White fall down, which doesn't happen very often, right? Yeah. How often does Tre'Davious White actually fall down like that? And Cousins launches it over his head. Absolutely launches it over his head. And he does the same thing to Thielen a couple times. Especially in the second half, there were back-to-back throws in the third quarter where he just launched the ball for Thielen's head. And that's not what the Vikings paid $96 million for.
Yeah, Nate, you know very well. I think I've said it on the pod back before Kirk Cousins signed anywhere. I'm not a Kirk Cousins guy. I watched a lot of Kirk Cousins, you know, 3 years before this. I think he's kind of an average quarterback, average accuracy. He just needs a great team around him. And when he gets down a couple scores and has to put the team on his back, it's not happening. So one thing I noticed, Anthony Barr is kind of a dirty player. That's the thing that stuck out most to me for the Vikings tape outside of Cousins.
So Barr looked absolutely, to me, he looked lost, but dirty player. So what did you see specifically that made you makes you think that?
So number one, that horse collar play, he absolutely could have wrapped up Josh Allen around his legs as he was running away from him. He deliberately reached out, stuck his hand inside his shoulder pads, and yanked him down from behind, probably just out of frustration, I'm guessing, because they were getting their asses beat. But that was number one for me. There was just no reason he needed to do that. It's against the rules, obviously. Everyone knows it. And then there was two other plays that I remember distinctly where he's just shoving guys after the play is well over. I can't remember exactly when they were, but it was something that jumped out to me when I was watching the tape, and I'm just like, wow, this guy is kind of a scumbag. And he also had that hit on Aaron Rodgers that was well after he threw the ball last year and kind of pile-drived him into the ground and broke his collarbone. So to me, that's enough to warrant Anthony Barr is a dirty player.
Yeah, and he you're right, he was so frustrated. Especially the first quarter, even. He just got destroyed. And the frustration when you're a dirty player and then you get frustrated, that's a really bad combination. That's when players start getting ejected from games and things like that. So that is Anthony Barr.
It's a name to watch out for the NFL fines list. So I want to end the All-22 section on something lighthearted. Nate, I think I sent you a little clip of it. The funniest thing from that game, at least within the game footage, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you did send me, you sent me the video of that on Snapchat. I had not seen it before you sent it to me, though.
So on the first Josh Allen touchdown run on that first drive of the game, you can tell he kind of checks over to Chris Ivory and tells him, you know, picking up someone if they blitz or something. The guy doesn't blitz, so Ivory steps out between the center and the right guard to just run a little, like, check down route for Josh Allen. Vlad Dukas is manhandling the Vikings defensive tackle and has him pretty much just locked up in the block. The defensive tackle's able to reach out and just kind of slap Chris Ivory with one hand and just sent him flying like 5 yards across the field. It's so funny. It's worth your time to go watch it.
Yes, and I went and rewatched it after he sent it to me, and it's very clear that Ivory had no idea that was going to happen, because normally one arm like that's not going to knock a 200-plus pound man flying in the air. But it was just, it's just too funny. He wasn't even looking, I don't think, and he just got a forearm to the chest and just went flying.
And the best part was, the first, like, one or two times I watched it, I couldn't figure out how he ended up flying that far, because it happened so quickly, you just didn't even see the guy hit him. But that was funny. So I think if we can pick out something like that once a week, we'll have the Chris Ivory Award, maybe we'll name it, for the funniest moment of the film of the week.
The Chris Ivory Award. That's a good tradition to start. The Chris Ivory Award once a week. We can certainly find someone to win the Chris Ivory Award every single week.
Maybe we'll make it a guy that just gets downright embarrassed by something like that. And if that hadn't happened, it would have been Trey White falling over from Stephon.
That was the first time I've ever seen Trey White do that. I mean, he usually is, and he was in Diggs' back pocket all game except for that play.
All right, so I think that'll be a good wrap up for the All 22 section of this pod. Now we'll move on to an NFL-wide Week 3 review, have a little fun and talk about some other teams. Nate, the Ryan Fitzpatrick we know and love finally returned.
I mean, we all expected it, right? I mean, especially if you're a Bills fan. If you're a Bills fan and you didn't expect Ryan Fitzpatrick to fall apart, then you're smoking something, man.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of, I mean, at this point in Fitzpatrick's career, probably 25% of the teams in the league, You know what Ryan Fitzpatrick is. He's played for your team. You're like, oh, maybe this guy's got something. And then there comes the 3 or 4 interception game. I mean, he still threw for 400 yards, 3 touchdowns, but the Fitz tragic came along with the Fitz magic finally this season. And it's going to be interesting to follow that down in Tampa Bay to see what they decide to do. Because if your former number one overall pick can't beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick, you've got some problems at quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jameis Winston's going to get that job back. I think he's a better quarterback than Fitzpatrick, but at the same time, Fitzpatrick did have his Fitz magic a couple games, and he almost came back a little bit against the Steelers too. I mean, it was really ugly at the beginning. Like that interception he threw that got returned for a touchdown, like 8 yards. That is vintage Ryan Fitzpatrick right there. Like that is the Ryan Fitzpatrick we know and love. He throws a ball falling away. I don't even know if he could see what he was throwing at, and misses his target by about 10 yards over his head, right to the defender who just walks in for a touchdown. That is stuff. That is what Ryan Fitzpatrick used to do like once a week, the second half. Right when he signed that extension with the Bills, once a week then on, he just have a throw like that.
All right, Nate. So another thing people are kind of talking about around the league, the whole AFC East is 1-2, except the Miami Dolphins. Are you buying the Dolphins at 3-0, or are they just a fluke right now?
They're pretenders. Dolphins are absolute pretenders. Yes, they're 3-0. Yes, they're probably going to win 8 or 9 games because they're 3-0 right now. But look at who they beat. They beat the Titans and the Raiders at home, neither of which are very good teams. And then they beat the Jets on the road, and the Jets are starting a rookie quarterback and don't really have a ton of weapons on offense. I just think that they are certain pretenders. And their schedule gets pretty tough. They play at New England, at Cincinnati, at the Packers. So they still have like 6 games that I just don't think they can win on their schedule. And knowing the Dolphins, they're not going to beat the Bills twice. They're not going to beat the Jets twice. When does that ever happen? I think the Dolphins are going to finish 8-8.
Yeah, I think you're right, Nate. 8-8's about the ceiling. They have a brutal last 5 games. I mean, maybe not 5, because the first of that 5-game stretch there is home against Buffalo, which, I don't know, maybe they win that game. But then I'm pretty sure they get New England, Minnesota, Buffalo on the road, and another tough team in there. And
they're going to lose. Jacksonville at home is the other game.
Yeah, so they're probably going to lose 3, if not all 4 of those. So if you're telling me the Dolphins are going to go, 7-2 before that, then sure, they might make the playoffs. But I think we can be realistic. This is the team I picked I thought was going to pick first overall. We can laugh at me because I'm wrong on that one. If I had to change, I think it's going to be the Raiders. The Raiders are bad. And I think Gruden's just completely lost out there 15 years after he last coached an NFL game. I don't know. I never thought he was a good coach. His career record was 500. And he's going to do things his way, man. And he traded away Khalil Mack. And that defense is just awful. So I think Oakland's going to be picking first.
Well, did you hear the story about how John Gruden basically has his own front office that works for him, and then the other front office is kind of, like the actual front office is kind of segregated, and Gruden listens to his guys more than he listens to the actual front office? Like, I just can't imagine what's going on in Where are they? Like, what? They're gonna be the Las Vegas Raiders next year or whatever.
Yeah, the Las Vegas Raiders picking first overall.
Yeah. So I don't know. So another team in the AFC East that I want to talk about is our good friends, the New England Patriots. Now they are 1-2, and Tom Brady has looked absolutely terrible the last 2 weeks. Do you think Tom Brady still has it in him?
I mean, I've doubted it for the last 4 or 5 years now. I guess until I see it for a full 16-game season, I still think the Patriots are going to win the division. Tom Brady might not be MVP caliber Tom Brady that we've seen the last couple of years. I don't know. I just, until I see it not happen, I think I've learned to just accept that they're going to keep winning. And I think they'll find a way to win the division. And I don't know how Brady has been good this long into his career. It defies everything we know about aging and quarterbacks. But until I see it happen for 16 games, I think he figures it out eventually.
Yeah, I think the key stretch is going to be, I mean, he plays Miami in New England this week. But then after that, the Patriots have 4 primetime games out of the next 5 weeks. And that's going to be the determinant of their season. I mean, the primetime games aren't necessarily all difficult games. But, I mean, I think 3 of them are fairly difficult against the Chiefs in Buffalo, against Green Bay. They're not the easiest games, and they also get to play the Colts in New England, which, who knows, it depends which Colts team shows up, because Andrew Luck's still not quite himself yet. But that stretch of games, if they don't come out of that Green Bay game, that Sunday night Green Bay game in Week 9 at 5-4 or better, I'll be really concerned.
I mean, in that case, the division might be wide open if, you know, the Bills and the Dolphins are sitting there at, you know, 4 or 5 wins apiece as well. I mean, I think we would still bet on the Patriots coming out with the division in that scenario with, you know, 7 or 8 games to play, it tied with 2 other teams in the division. But I think we can write the Jets off. I mean, they have a rookie quarterback that's either afraid to throw the ball further than 3 yards down the field, or they won't let him. And that's just a terrible way to play offense in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, Darnold, yes, he did have that game against Miami where he threw for 335 yards or whatever, but it is early in the season, he's a rookie, but I haven't been super, super impressed with Darnold quite yet. He's just, the thing that's really gets me with him is he's thrown some really horrible interceptions every single week.
Yeah, and how did we forget about that Thursday night game, Nate? I should have let off with that. Baker Mayfield, he was, you know, basically tied with Josh Rosen for us for our top guys. He looked like a stud right out of the gates, man. And Sam Darnold just paled in comparison to Baker Mayfield. I know it's one half of football, and that's not going to define a guy's whole career. But just, I don't know, Baker looks so much more accurate, so much more decisive. There's a lot of room for growth between both quarterbacks there, but give me Mayfield all day out of any of these rookie quarterbacks.
Yeah, Mayfield is going to, at the very least, make the Browns very fun to watch, because I think the Browns are going to score quite a few points, and their defense is pretty good. I mean, they could end up with Baker winning 7 or 8 games this season. That wouldn't really surprise me a whole lot. I mean, if they finish like 8-7-1 and sneak into the wild card, would I be surprised? Probably not. Do I think they're going to do that? Do I think they're going to finish 8-7-1 and make the wild card? No, I don't think so. But I'm very, very excited to watch Baker continue his career, and I'm very glad he is not playing in the AFC East.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but the Browns could have, you know, at least a playoff contending team for 15 years to come if Baker Mayfield can play like he did Thursday night. And like you said, they've got some weapons: Jarvis Landry, David Njoku, Carlos Hyde, Antonio Callaway. They got weapons around him, and the defense is a lot better than people give it credit for. So the Browns are definitely going to be in that wild card hunt, I think, in the AFC. And I'll also say, I do feel bad for Tyrod Taylor. That's not the way you want to see a guy take the job from someone else. I mean, Tyrod was awful to begin the season. He's a better quarterback than he showed. And I don't know. I just genuinely like the guy, and I feel bad for him again that he's going to take the back seat.
Yeah, it's he's had a rough go of it in his career. When he's gotten his chance, something has happened that kind of knocked him back down to earth, and he hasn't been really wanted places he's been, and I think it's just another situation where Hugh Jackson probably wanted him more than anyone else that worked for the Browns wanted him.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that I think that's his third concussion in the last 13 months. So now you have to wonder, you know, could this be it for Tyrod Taylor because of his health? And that's kind of some consequences of playing the game of football that we don't really think about as fans. But at this point, I think he's, what, 28 years old? And he's had several concussions now that have been documented. And it's just concerning to me because I really like the guy. I'd love to see him get a chance with another team next year to be a starter. It's tough for him because he can't seem to catch a break. Like you said, he never seems wanted. He can't catch a break. And he's just a genuinely likable guy.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed Tyrod Taylor's time in Buffalo. He made the Bills a better football team. He gave them a chance to win most of the time, which is more than you could say about pretty much every Bills quarterback since Drew Bledsoe. And for that, he got the Buffalo Bills to the playoffs, and that's something Bills fans will never forget. So most of us in Buffalo, I think, will always have something good to say about Tyrod.
All right, Nate, so is there anything else from around the league that you want to hit on before we close out this pod? It wasn't quite as crazy as the 2 weeks before that.
No, the only thing I do want to talk about how bad two teams in the NFL are. There are two teams in this league that are so bad. I thought there were going to be three after the first week. I thought the Bills were going to be in that group, but I'll take the Bills out of that group for now. There are two other teams that are so bad that they're difficult to watch. And one of them I think is significantly worse than the other one, but they're both pretty bad. And those are the Arizona Cardinals and the Oakland Raiders. The Cardinals are just an absolute disaster. And if they win a game this year, I mean, Josh Rosen's starting now, so that could change. But they've scored 20 points this season in three games. 20 points in three games.
Yeah, not ideal.
No, I think every other team in the NFL has scored at least 50. I'm trying to see. Oh, no, there's two. So there's two other teams in the NFL that haven't gotten to 50. One of them is at 49. So they're close, pretty close. And they've won two games. That's the Titans. And then the Cowboys have only scored 41 points. Everyone else scored at least 50 points, and the Cardinals have 20.
Yeah, they're really bad. And another team that's low-key bad, the Dallas Cowboys. Dak Prescott is not good when he doesn't have, you know, an A-plus offensive line and good receivers to throw the ball to. He's been pretty awful through three games this year, and it really makes me wonder why there was so much hype about him when we knew they had a great offensive line, a competent defense, you know, pretty good weapons his first season there when Tony Romo went down. Dallas could be in trouble going forward, I think, in the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly agree with that, especially when it comes time to either pay Dak or let him walk. Because it's going to be a tough decision, because I don't think Dak is really that good. It's Ezekiel Elliott is a pretty good player, but beyond that, do they have a lot more? I don't know, not really. And that's a team that kind of banked on using Dak's contract and how cheap his contract is, his rookie contract is, to be able to compete. And when that runs out, that team could be in trouble.
Yeah, I have a bit of schadenfreude towards Jerry Jones there. I don't mind watching the Cowboys suck. That's something I do delight in a little bit. Not quite as much as I enjoy watching the New England Patriots struggle and be 1-2, along with the Buffalo Bills. But anything else you want to hit on before we wrap this up, Nate?
One last thing. Actually, I was looking at the playoff standings today. Yes, it's week four. We only played three games, but the New England Patriots are 14th in the AFC right now. The only two teams worse than them in the AFC in terms of playoff standing are the Oakland Raiders and the Houston Texans, who are both winless. So that is my fun. They have no tiebreakers of all the 1 and 2 teams in the AFC. They have zero tiebreakers. So that is my my fun stat for the week.
There we go. The Bills are ahead of the New England Patriots, who are almost dead last in the AFC. That is your takeaway from week 3. So that brings us to an end of episode 29, I think it is, of the Bills Breakdown podcast. I am your co-host, Alex Pollinger.
And I am Nate Schreiber.
Subscribe, download, give us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast so others can give it a listen. We'd also appreciate it if you can share the pod with a friend so we can keep growing our downloads, keep growing our community. We also like to have fun on Twitter, interacting with people during the games and throughout the week. You can follow us there at Bills_Breakdown, Facebook at Bills Breakdown. Send us any segment ideas, Chris Ivory Award nominees, whatever you want, either of those locations or Bills Breakdown Podcast at gmail.com. Thank you for listening.